The J Talk Podcast.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, and wow, what about that? We are recording in the immediate aftermath of Japan 2, Colombia 1, and I couldn't think of a two better guests to have on the podcast after such a monumental result. Alan Gibson from J Soccer Magazine and Cesare Polenghi from Football Tribe are with me. Firstly, Alan, wow, instant reaction. Wow. How are you?
Over the moon, Jim. Over the moon. Can I just say, I told you so. No, I'm a bit of a fanboy, but I've been optimistic all the way. But that was even more than expected, wasn't it?
I would imagine so. Cesare, yeah. What can you say? Absolutely stunning result. I think Japan have shocked the world. Firstly, it's great to have you back on the podcast, though. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks very much. I think indeed it was a very surprising result, and of course we'll take it. You know, we're very happy of it. I decided this was the most surprising result so far, because Mexico beating Germany, you know, like champions struggling the first game, and you know, Mexico is an overall very, you know, rated team. Nobody expected this result to happen in this game, except for Alan, of course. I was rather pessimistic. To be honest, I expected a similar result to the one we had in the previous World Cup. But, you know, there's one thing we often say in Italy when there's a, you know, desperate game, you know, like when you think you're going to lose, you say, oh, you never know what happened in football. Maybe, you know, the other team, you know, gets a red card after 3 minutes and you get a penalty. That's exactly what happened. But with that said, this, you know, like clearly Japan was lucky in that, it was a deserved, you know, chance, you know, after all. And, you know, like Osako did well, Kagawa did well. And of course, also the fact that, James Rodriguez was in off the game, it was huge. But when everything is said and done, Japan played an excellent game, especially in the second half. I think they were really, really, perfect. I just tweeted that, in my opinion, those were the best 45 minutes, I've ever seen, since I've been following Japan back in the 90s. Even better than 2010, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you both. I mean, there's obviously, not two better guests that I could have on. I mean, you guys have seen it all, literally, when it comes to Japan at the World Cup. And, yeah, I have to ask the question, and I'm probably getting carried away myself, but is this, Alan, is this a bigger result than Japan's first ever win at the World Cup over Russia in 2002? Is this a bigger result than beating Denmark in 2010? Where does this stand? I mean, yeah, we're obviously... we're a little bit overcome with the shock of this result, I think. But I mean, where does this stand in terms of Japan's all-time World Cup results for you?
Well, apart from the obvious that I'm really happy, and I'm saying I was so optimistic and excited about it. But it's one win out of three. Now we all know that Japan are now going to come and lose against Senegal and draw against Poland or something and get knocked out, right? But seriously, I think
I wasn't expecting you to be the pessimistic one.
Hey, you'd heard of jinxing, right? No, I think seriously, it was excellent. I think Nishino picked really much the best team we could think of, except for most people want to see Kosuke Nakamura sooner rather than later. And I'm sure we'll come to discuss the goal later. I wasn't sure. Nagatomo was excellent. Well, everybody was excellent.
Hang on, Alan. You haven't answered the question. Where does this rank in terms of Japan's all-time World Cup results? Is this their best ever World Cup win?
I don't know. I mean, because I think Denmark in particular, I think Denmark was an excellent result that really could have sent Japan on to bigger things. And to be honest, in the next game, Paraguay, wasn't it? I'm not sure. I think they should have won it, could have won it, and didn't. And then, you know, it sort of went downhill from there, which was really sad. I won't say that this is the best. I'll say if we get out of the group with the third game result, that will be the one that matters to me.
All right. As a one-off game, Cesare, where does this rank for you in terms of Japan at the World Cup?
Well, I think this is the strongest team we've ever beaten at the World Cup.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I mean, like, you know, clearly when we beat Russia, that, you know, it was a good result. And, you know, of course, against Cameroon and against Denmark, those were all good results. You know, even the 0-0 with Paraguay was good. But this time, you know, like, I mean, Colombia is a good team. I picked them as a dark horse for the tournament. You know, they have a lot of top players, you know, players who are playing, you know, in top European leagues, you know, a good mix of young players and experienced players. And, you know, James Rodriguez is just like one of the best players in the world, you know, like, I mean, of course, if you look for how much it costed to Real Madrid and, you know, how much is paid. So I think, you know, that really, I have a great manager as well. Peckerman is a world-class manager. I mean, I think it's a really, really, it's a shocker, not only for us in Japan, for the whole world. I mean, just like 3 minutes after the game was over, I got like 20, 30 messages, and also the main football radio show in Italy sent me a message saying, you need to be on our show tomorrow, you know, we need to find out more about Japan. So, it's really, really huge, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Alan, you started mentioning some of the players and how they performed. I did want to ask you both your opinion on the 11 before we get into the minutiae of the game, and obviously the major talking point in just the third minute. But for me, and you can probably talk amongst yourselves here on these decisions that Nishino had in front of him. For me, there were basically five major choices that he had to make: at centre back alongside Yoshida, at right back, at centre midfield alongside Hasebe, and, well, I guess six, because all three positions behind Yuya Osako, I guess, were up for debate. So, well, obviously we can look back and say that Nishino's a genius because Japan had won the game. Alan, did you agree with all the decisions that he made in those regards, especially with the Shibasaki in central midfield rather than Hotaru Yamaguchi? I think there was a feeling that he was probably going to go with the more defensive pairing, but putting Shibasaki in from the start showed that Japan were perhaps more intent on taking the game on than we might have initially thought they were.
No, I definitely think Shibasaki was the man. He's played himself into that position over his performances over the last few months, of course, but also the last game of Japan. He was excellent. And before he left, when he was playing for Antlers, he was a defensive midfield player, and then he sort of lost his way, lost his confidence. Various national team managers said he wasn't good enough, wasn't up for the fight. But he's come back and he's proved himself in a, for want of a better word, a 4-2-3-1, and even a 4-1-3-2 or whatever it is. I think he's become the man, and Hasebe will be leaving soon. I'm hoping that Ideguchi will be the man to come and join him, but that's another story. So Hasebe, was that okay for me there? You missed out the left back for me. We all like Nagatomo was great and is great. But against Paraguay, and even the game before that, Sakai worked very hard and closed down his players on the left, as well as getting up and down the wing. And I thought he might have played himself in. But it wasn't, it wasn't discussed, and Nagatomo was in, and Nagatomo did fine. So talking of Sakai on the other side again, then yes, I think the right decision there. And then his top three, or rather his three behind the top one, were the ones that were in form, I think. So no complaints there. The only other discussion perhaps would be Osako over Muto. But I think Osako's the one that sort of proved himself over the last couple of years. Obviously the goalkeeper is the one we're all discussing.
Indeed. All right, well, Cesare, yeah, what did you think of the way that Japan set up?
Well, I think, you know, like today there were a few individuals amazing performances. I think that Shibazaki and Nagatomo were really amazing, and of course Osako. You know, like, you know, when you score a goal like that, you know, that's a real goal. You know, we don't see many goals. When we see a goal like that in the J League, usually scored by a foreign player, isn't it? So there were a few that did well, but I think it was really a team performance. So I think that, you know, if you just talking about, you know, what Nishino did, more than, you know, like praising him for the individual, you know, picks of the players, those are always debatable. You know, we know that in football, you know, sometimes there's a lot of elements that influence a performance, so at times doesn't, you know, just knock as well. But the way the team were consistent, they played compacted, they were balanced, they were focused, that clearly you have to give it to Nishino, and, you know, and overall, you know, to the team as a unit. I think it was a great performance as a team. I mean, especially in the second half, so many things could have gone wrong, and already one went really wrong in the first half on that free kick. But, you know, they conceded very little, and they created those three chances and scored one. I mean, this, from my perspective, as a very, you know, down-to-earth, realistic, you know, Italian follower of football, it's just the best that you can do. They were really, really great. Yeah, absolutely. If we want to get into the discussion about the goalkeeper, definitely, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like, of question marks on, you know, why is Kawashima still the goalkeeper. But I don't think that, you know, we should just, like, only criticize the fact that he's a goalkeeper. We really should, consider the fact that in the last, 10 years, no real top goalkeeper emerged in Japan, just as, just like there are some positions which historically, you know, Japan is, is not good at developing players.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm with him.
Absolutely, and we'll obviously come on to the Colombia equaliser 6 minutes before half time. But the I don't know what this will go down in folklore as. We of course have the miracle of Miami from the 1996 Olympics. The success in Saransk probably doesn't have quite the same ring to it, but I'm sure the Wags will come up with something that is more fitting than that to describe this stunner. Oh, there you go, the stunner in Saransk. Yes, so in just the third minute, Gen Shoji headed out a cross in from the left. Kagawa flicked over the top for Osako, who held off his man, got a couple of fortunate ricochets as the ball bounced around between the two players' legs, and Osako threw on goal. The keeper made a low save. Kagawa, who to his credit followed up on the play, lashed the rebound on goal. Carlos Sanchez stuck out his right arm to deny Japan a certain goal. Luckily for Japan, the ref spotted it and was straight to his pocket for a red card. Firstly, Alan, as a qualified referee, that was the correct procedure followed?
Indeed. Ignoring the fact that there's VAR as well, which I really we don't want to get into, I suppose. It was definitely a handball, and therefore it was an deliberate stopping of a chance, or in fact it would have been a goal. So, and I was like, well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, look at the replay, and sure enough, his arm goes out. It's quite obvious that he stopped it. So, yep, red card, penalty, and a goal.
Absolutely, calmly taken by Kagawa, past David Ospina. So, Cesare, when we talked about the 11 there, we didn't actually talk about the Shinji Kagawa decision. So Nishino plumped for Kagawa in the number 10 role ahead of Keisuke Honda. Yeah. It obviously paid off in just the third minute. But when you saw the team, were you surprised at that decision?
No, I wasn't, because I think that Kagawa's, had a good performance against Paraguay in the last friendly game, and he seemed, more fit than Honda overall. So I thought, I sort of expected him to start there. I didn't mention him in the players who just had a especially good performance, and I think, his performance was okay, not super was okay, but you really need to give it to him for the way he took the penalty kick. You probably remember in the last Asian Cup that he didn't want to take the penalties against the Emirates, and then he went on as the sixth kicker after he went into sudden death penalties, and he missed. And we knew he was going to miss that. In that occasion he really showed lack of guts. Yeah. Yeah. This time he made it very clear from the beginning, I'm taking it. And it was daring penalties, a 50-50 penalty, but he scored. And it was good. It was really good that, I think that, maybe for the teammates who know him well and who know he sometimes is a bit, psychologically weak, to see him so confident and to take the penalty, to score, to celebrate so well, I think he really gave him an extra, extra motivation, So it's, we have to give it to him, it's just he was worth of the uniform, of the jersey number 10. And though he wasn't, fantastic, I think he played a good game. We gave him 6.5 in the ratings. So I think, yeah, it was okay.
All right, fair enough. And Kagawa was in the action, creating Japan's next chance in the 15th minute after Shibasaki had won the ball back on the halfway line. Kagawa embarked on a bit of a mazy dribble and teed up Takashi Inui. Another line ball decision for Nishino, and obviously his two goals against Paraguay secured Inui a spot in the 11. But, Alan, his finish was more reminiscent of his first half against Paraguay than his second. I think the ball might have bobbled a little bit off the turf, but a pretty horrible miss from Inui, and even as early as the 15th minute, I was wondering whether a miss like that might come back to haunt Japan.
Oh, you're not wrong. But there was so much, well, in this house, we were going back to the Doha tragedy and all sorts of things there as that game progressed. But I thought I had about literally five or six different people from around the world, Canada, in fact, two from Canada, one from England, one from Singapore. People who don't really follow the Japanese game but know that I'm nuts about it were like messaging me like, I saw that, what's that, who's this guy, what's that guy? And a lot of them were slagging Inui. They were like, who is this guy? And I think his two goals did earn him that place, but he was probably the weakest link of a very strong team today. That was almost a nice finish. You know, the initial feeling was, oh, he's put it around the post, but the replay showed it spinning, and it wasn't that far away. But that was probably the best thing he did. I literally had one particular guy from Canada saying to me, what was this number 14, and why is he on the pitch? And I had to explain that he was a good player and, you know, be patient. But, yes, he was probably the weakest link of the team, but he did well. He just seemed a bit weak today. He seemed to be making the wrong decisions and giving the passes and the ball away a bit more often than he usually did, or perhaps when he did in the first half in Paraguay.
Indeed. And just past the half-hour mark, Cesare, a decision by the Colombian manager that must have tugged at your heartstrings. Obviously, with Colombia down to 10 men, something had to give. And stunningly, it was Juan Cuadrado who was removed. That was a stunner for me, and I'm sure that must have shocked you and no end as well.
Yeah, it shocked me because, you know, like, Cuadrado, you know, like, of course, because I support Juventus, so I've seen him playing just like, you know, about 60 times this season. He had a fantastic season, and he's the kind of player who can actually do two roles in the same game. I mean, he can be an attacking wing and also, a defender. So, you know, he's the kind of guy that makes something happen in every given game. So he's possibly, you know, the last player I would have subbed out. But, you know, maybe this is another, you know, like, lucky thing for Japan. I have to say, though, that until the substitution, the duel against Nagatomo was going for the Japanese player. I mean, there were like 2-3 times in 1v1, and, you know, Nagatomo was very well positioned, very well, very calm. Didn't commit, and so maybe that just, you know, one of the reasons why he just he got subbed out. Sorry, if I can backtrack 1 second, talking about Inui, Alan, when they ask you who is that guy, he is the most successful Japanese player in the Spanish league so far. I mean, indeed. He's just like, yeah, he was there for, you know, he played 3 good seasons in Eibar, and I've been, you know, has been bought by Betis, which is he's going to be in the Europa League next year. I don't think he had a bad game. I think, actually, you know, like 2-3 times, he was the only one that, you know, skill-wise, idea-wise, creativity-wise, was at the same level of, you know, the best players we've seen in the tournament so far. He just got like 3 times, he had terrible shots. The shot that he missed in the first half that should have killed the game, it was very similar to a mistake he had against Paraguay. He just kind of choked the ball. The ball bounced down, you know, like he hits the ball too high, in the middle of the ball, and the ball bounces basically into the ground and then rolls away with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's just like, it's just a shame, because that's, for a player of his skill, that's just like, should be almost like a penalty, you know, like, and he missed it in the practice game, missed it today, and a couple of times in the second half too, one was, one shot hit a defender, the other one was saved, you know, how do you say? Good performance for him, really. I think, you know, I wasn't disappointed with him, but could do better. Sometimes he gets a bit lost into his footwork, you know, it reminds me, you know, like a futsal player, but, you know, I still think he's just the best player we have in that position at the moment.
He certainly tried to take his man on several times in the second half as well, didn't he? He was running at the defence, which was good to see, and something that Japan tends to lack, of course. So, a couple of decent opportunities. They forced one good save from Ospina, and another shot was blocked before it got that far. But, I think, Alan, it's probably lucky that your friend didn't see the first half against Paraguay because, that was... That was very much bordering on the Tomoya Ugaijin territory in terms of the worst half of football I've ever seen a player representing Japan put in. But then, of course, he bounced back and he secured his place in the 11 today by getting those two goals, and they were excellent finishes against Paraguay. So, bounced back terrifically well. And, I thought he did okay. And as I say, offered something different running at the defence in the second half. So there you go, Cesare. If you don't mind spoiling it, what did Inui get in the football tribe ratings?
We gave him a 6.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, just about average then?
Yeah, it's probably the lowest, together with Maya and Shoji. You know, they got 6. We got, you know, we just used the European standard, so 6, it means you passed. And the 6, it means, okay, you know, it's a fair game, okay? So we think we did a fair game. I think they were lights and shadows in his performance. But, you know, one thing you have to consider is just what you say. When you have like a player like him who always goes for the 1v1, it also helps a lot in keeping the other team on their toes, and it makes them tired, which was just like something we definitely need, considering they were like one, you know, with one player less than Japan. So I think, you know, it was okay. I mean, nobody I said it was the lowest rating of the 10 field players, of course. Sorry. Correct that. Maybe we should get into that. It's a good transition into, you know, Kawashima's blunder.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to mention the chance for Osako just after that Cuadrado substitution. That was another golden chance for Japan to make it 2-0, but his shot went right across the face of goal and out for a throw. But then, it was 6 minutes before halftime when Colombia drew level. And I think we can all agree that the decision by the referee to award the free kick against Makoto Hasebe was harsh, to put it
terrible.
Mildly. Yeah, and frankly wrong. Mildly. Frankly wrong, yes. But given it was in favour of Radamel Falcao, and... Quintero put his free kick under Kawashima's wall and just inside Kawashima's near post before he could claw the ball back onto the line, and rather curiously, insist that the ball hadn't crossed the line, even though the referee has a goal line technology watch on his wrist to tell him that it did just that. But yes, I mean, Cesare, you mentioned before the people have been calling for a changing goal for a while now. Obviously, Akira Nishino does not listen to this podcast because various guests have been going on about, Kawashima needs to go, but more importantly, Kosuke Nakamura needs to come in for the better part of the last year and a half. But nothing has been done about it, obviously, and it could have been costly for Japan. It might be costly again down the road because I can't see him making a change this late in the day, especially after Japan have won the game. I mean, there's been enough examples in the friendlies against Ghana and Switzerland to show that, you know, Kawashima is a liability at times, but Nishino just seems to favour the experience. And sorry, I didn't think I directed this to anyone, but Cesare, you were leading into a comment on Kawashima, so why don't you take it?
I think, you know, like... I mean, he is very good on 1v1, you know, like you're Australian. You probably remember the final of the 2011, in January 2011, the Asia Cup. I think like 2-3 times he was 1v1 against an Australian player and he stopped him brilliantly. He just like, you know, he has some qualities, but there's two things that, you know, like, are a bit, you know, like, liabilities with him. One is just like the high balls. It's just like, you know, he tends to stand on the goal line most of the time. And then, but overall, like the directing, the decision making, you know, it seems a bit, weird. Like this time, you know, like you had the feeling he could have just basically walked and stopped the ball with one foot, right? The free kick was well placed and under the wall, but it was very slow. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was just like, you know, when I saw it, I said, oh, it's going on. Oh, but it's so slow. What? he went in. You know, it was just a terrible mistake. Also because, you know, to be honest, it was depressing. It's like, gosh, we were one goal up. You know, everything's going well. They're down with 10 men, and we give away such a stupid goal. You know, like, also, as you said, coming from a very debatable, I mean, it wasn't a fork, I mean, clearly. You know, I think what happened is just like a few seconds before, Haraguchi just bumped very hard into Falcao. And I think that was probably not a penalty, but, you know, still a little debatable. I thought the referee did, you know, 1+1, and, you know, like, tried to maybe not to correct, but, you know, like I said, okay, the one before was almost a fall. This may be almost a fall. I give him a free kick, you know. And, you know, this compensation is really wrong, but, you know, referee tend to do that, you know, like. And, yeah, so it was a very bad moment, you know. Like, it's the moment I think we all felt, oh, my God, we're just going to blow this one up again, you know, like, James Rodriguez is going to come back in the second half, you know, like, we're just going to lose it. Instead, you know, like, no, it didn't happen. So that's, you know. Despite, you know, Kawashima's terrible mistake, you know, oops, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right, Chesney. I'll throw to Alan and get his thoughts. I mean, Alan, you tend to be glass half full when it comes to Japan. You tend to be supportive of the players. What about Kawashima? Do you feel it's time for a change, or I mean, it's probably a moot point because, like I've said in the last few weeks, I can't see it happening myself. But I mean, have you had enough of Kawashima?
I think I probably had enough of Kawashima 2 or 3 years ago, but he's been stuck with, and it's probably not the time to change a keeper after winning the first group in a World Cup. So,
right.
I think we will get him again. At the time, I tweeted, how can you blame the keeper when the ball went under the wall and it was supposed to be covering that post? But, you know, the second and third looks, he really should have had it. He had plenty of time. He just dived behind the line, didn't he? Basically, I mean, it was behind the ball, but the ball was over the line. Kudos to the manager, I presume, Mr. Peckerman, who'd seen that Japanese wall jump on free kicks over the last two games, I'm pretty sure.
That's true. Good point.
You know, that was probably some very good scouting as opposed to some very bad wall or goalkeeping. Backtracking a little onto the decision making is the key problem for me. He doesn't seem to leave his line when he needs to, and other times he leaves his line too quickly.
Yeah, he tends to sit down at times, you know, almost to, you know, fall on his butt when there's a high ball. It's very undecisive in fact, every time there's a corner kick or a cross, I'm always just now, you know, like, holding my breath. Luckily today, you know, two times Falcao was just, like, managed to flick balls and they went straight into his arms.
Yeah.
But
we call him Dracula. Call him Dracula because he hates crosses, yeah? The old ones are the best.
Excellent. All right, Cesare, you mentioned a couple of chances for Falcao in the 12th minute and just past the half hour. Yes, they were warning signs for Japan before the equaliser. And so we went in at halftime 1-1. Obviously, Japan still with the man advantage, but having let the advantage on the scoreboard slip away. And I think... was there, for both of you, was there obviously regret at having lost the lead and in the way it happened with the free kick awarded in a frustrating fashion and then obviously the goalkeeping error, but were you both frustrated that Japan didn't do more to try and press home the advantage? I mean, as we've mentioned, the chances for Inui and Osako, did you feel they did enough in general play, Alan, to push for the second goal before halftime?
I think they could have done more. As you said, when they attacked and when they went for it, they created chances, but they tended to hang back a little bit. And ironically, and as we've been talking, I've realized why I thought this, that they reminded me of a championship winning Gamba back in the mid-2000s. And, you know, they'd pass, wait, and then there was a killer ball. And of course, that was Nishino. And it didn't even occur to me while I was watching the game because I was too engrossed in it. But that was so typical Nishino, considering he's only been with them one month and a couple of games, and one of those was a terrible game. He has got them doing what he likes to do. He's passing, keeping away, and then looking for that killer ball. And when they came out for the second half, they did attack, and it created a whole new game, didn't it?
I think, you know, there was only two ways Colombia could have scored once Cuadrado came out, and one was like a through ball to Falcao, which almost happened a couple of times, and the other way through, you know, set pieces. So I think that, you know, like that in the second half, Japan were very, very, very good at avoid those situations, and that's how, you know, basically they, even through the first half, I mean, they conceded very, very little overall. So, I mean, I think that, you know, the point is like, you know, when you're winning 1-0, if you don't give many chances, it's unlikely that the opposition is going to score, and you are going to win anyway. I mean, that's at least, you know, the way I see a game as an Italian. Because that doesn't mean anyway you're not going to get chances. I mean, Japan had, I would say, like at least, you know, three, four good chances. You know, of course, the two from with Inoue, of course, the one from Hiroki Sakai that then was, you know, that generated a corner kick from which Japan scored. So I think, you know, like as far as you don't concede much, just like, you know, there's no real need to, you know, to go out of the way attacking if you feel you have the game in control. Of course, the risk is like if you fall back too much and you have the feeling that the other team is, you know, pushing you and creating chance, then is where maybe you can think, oh, if we are a little, you know, longer on the pitch, you know, like we can probably, you know, give them some troubles and keep them away from our penalty area. But I don't think it was the need. I mean, I think Japan, like, you know, they were very, very mature tactically. One more thing, when you looked at the expression on the face of the players, you know, you really realize that there are guys such as Nagatomo or Maya Yoshida, Hasebe, who really have been in Europe for a long time. And you could really tell that they have now the experience and the confidence, the calm that it takes to manage a game at this level. So I think that was really a key factor in today's game. I wish, you know, like, sorry, I have to backtrack to what happened, you know, before the World Cup started. I wish we had a few young players as well with some European experience who, you know, if not the starter, who could have been at least on the bench and make a difference when needed. But, okay, you know, we are, those are the players we have now, and this is the player we need to do it, so.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, no, fair enough. Well said, Cesare. All right, well, basically, my notes for the second half are pretty much all chances for Japan until about 12 minutes to go when Yuya Osako and Genki Haraguchi both threw themselves in front of Colombia's shots. But, yeah, there were a multitude of chances, near misses, some last-gasp defending from Colombia as well. In amongst it all, we had James Rodriguez come on just before the hour mark, just before Maya Yoshida headed a chance wide from a Gaku Shibasaki free kick. Yeah, Honda came on for Kagawa with 20 minutes to go and had a shot straight away from 30 yards, a bit of a range finder. And then Cesare's mentioned, Hiroki Sakai's shot, which I think was probably destined for the bottom corner, was deflected out.
It was.
With a last-gasp piece of defending by the Colombian defender, a fantastic bit of defending, actually. But, yes, from that corner, Honda swung it in from the Japan left. Osako rose, and bingo bango, Alan, 2-1 to Japan. And yeah, sparking celebrations here, there, and everywhere. And, yeah, fantastic to see from Osako. His performances in the lead-up games, he'd certainly needed a goal, and he didn't get one. So you might have had questions about his psyche heading into this game. But, yeah, what a way to get yourself off the mark under Nishino. And goodness knows what this will do for his confidence in the next two games.
You hit the nail on the head. Confidence is what Japan will have now. It's going to be great. Backtracking again, as we state, I think the key point for Japan was when James Rodriguez came on. Because, you know, everybody got excited for a couple of minutes, but he didn't seem to do anything at all. And then Japan kept the ball, went on the attack, and he just didn't seem fit. And the problem with not being fit when you're down to 10 men, he wasn't chasing the ball. He wasn't able to chase the ball. So when Japan were attacking and keeping the ball, it seemed that Colombia went then down to 9 men because James just wasn't doing anything. You could see how frustrated he was when he finally hacked down Haraguchi from behind and got a yellow card. Mm. So I think that was a key point. I think bringing him on was a mistake.
Yeah, I think he, you know, they probably, you know, thought, okay, he's the kind of guy who can still invent something out of nothing. And if there's a set piece, he will be definitely the best guy to take it. So I think that was probably Peckersman way of thinking. There's another factor, though, which is very important, which is it's just like the psychological impact he could have had on the game.
Yes.
Now, if you backtrack 4 years, in the game Japan played against Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, it was a very, very similar situation. And when Drogba came in, he didn't do much, but, you know, it sort of psychologically killed the Japanese players. It's just like they were, oh, my God, we're playing against Drogba. Oh, my God. And, you know, it's interesting. Zach Caroni did say very straightforwardly in an interview, not an interview, actually an event in Tokyo, like a few months after. Zach Caroni was invited to this event on leadership. And then here's the coach who just made one point out of three games and he gets invited to talk about leadership. But, okay, this being in Japan, these things happen. And one of the things that he said, you know, he was discussing the three games one after another. And, you know, talking about the lack of leadership, I imagine, he said clearly, when Drogba came in, my players lost confidence. Mm. And when James Rodriguez came in, actually, you know, I don't know if you're following on Twitter, there's like, I think the League of Nations, the Champions League, there were like about 20 people who tweeted, oh, he's going to come back in the second half and win it. He's going to change the game. James Rodriguez coming in. But, you know, he clearly is not fit. And, you know, I agree with that, with what Alan said. Seeing the result, it was a mistake to bring him in. He was just like, he was useless and he was frustrated. Yeah, it's been a tough tournament for, top stars in this World Cup so far. Only Cristiano Ronaldo has been really amazing. All the others, you know, Griezmann, Neymar,
Harry Kane.
Well, Harry Kane, yeah, I agree. Sorry, I think he will become a star after this tournament.
True,
I don't think he's up
true,
in the league as others, but yeah, he was really, really good in this. I mean, he's an amazing player.
Absolutely. Well, let me come back to you, Cesare, because, I mentioned my notes for the second half. And basically, yeah, from that double chance that Colombia had in the 78th minute, it was a Rodriguez shot that Osako threw himself in front of. And then, I'm sorry, I didn't catch who the Colombia player who had the shot on the after the Japan defence failed to clear a corner, but the danger was averted. And from there on, I didn't make a note of another Colombia chance. So I think the way that Japan closed the game out fairly calmly and fairly in a fairly controlled manner also deserves praise. I mean, we were talking that they didn't do enough to ram home their advantage in the first half, but I think they managed the last 12 or 13 minutes, and indeed the 5 minutes of added time, extremely well and extremely professionally.
Definitely, what Cesare said. I think the experience showed through, and these guys were able to literally kill the game. They passed it back, they passed it across the field. I think there was one stray pass. I think it was Inouye again, actually, but just one stray pass, perhaps. But suddenly the ball was lost, but there were three players on the guy. I think they basically, yeah, killed the game, which you rarely see from a Japanese team.
Yeah, fantastic to see, Cesare. And, it certainly bodes well if Japan happened to lead in either of their two remaining games, I would say.
No, I'm watching right now. Poland and Senegal, you know, like it's strange how perspective changes.
Well, I don't have that on. It's on in the other room. I can't see it, so I'm not aware of what's going on. Sorry.
It's 0-0 and nothing much is happening, but, you know, you all of a sudden you realize that the players on the pitch are, yeah, there's some good players there, but at the moment they look very normal. You know, I don't say it's just strange as, you know, perspective changes after one result like this, but this is football again. I mean, if you looked at the groups, I thought Japan is the toughest group. You know, all the other three teams have some, you know, have something that Japan is lacking, and in particular, all three teams have very good strikers. And we know that if you look at our, you know, defensive package, you know, center backs and goalkeeper, the only very, top player we have is Maya Yoshida. So I was really concerned. I said, okay, you know, if Falcao gets four balls, he's going to score two goals, and, you know, and same for Lewandowski, and same, you know, for Mane, or, you know, like, now it seems like everything seems possible, which is the great thing. I think this group is going to go down to the last game, and it's going to be unbelievably exciting. The last game is going to be something, you know, really, you know, enjoyable. And, but if Japan, you know, plays with the same confidence and the same composure they had they put in this game, and, you know, let's be honest, if he has the same, you know, I don't say luck, but, you know, if things go keep going well, okay, then, you know, the chances, you know, the chances are there, I think, you know, like, I mean, Japan at this point, I think, yes, a good 50% of chance to go through the group, I would say.
Agreed. You might be wondering why we're not recording after the Poland-Senegal game, so we're not fully aware of what's going on in the group. Obviously, you will be by the time you listen to this podcast, faithful listeners, but basically the main reason is that Poland-Senegal kicked off at 11 p.m. Japan time. Midnight Japan time, and it doesn't finish until 2 a.m., and we all have lives, and we don't want to be recording podcasts at 2 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, we're here to react instantly to Japan's win. We don't know at the moment what's going to transpire in the Poland-Senegal game and what that will mean for Japan in their next game, and indeed for the group as we work our way through it. But I think we can kind of segue on to Senegal now. And Cesare, I'll come to you first. Ever since the Ghana game and in Nishino's first friendly, where he experimented with three at the back and then went back to a four against Switzerland, I was of the mind that he was employing a horses for courses strategy, and that the three at the back against the African opponent Ghana was meant to mirror what he wants to do in the World Cup against Senegal. Where do you stand on that? Do you think he'd be foolish to change a winning team after this fantastic result against Colombia? So I've probably asked you three questions in one there, but yeah, what do you think he'll do against Senegal?
I would definitely keep the same team. We're now including Kawashima. It's just Alan said before, I think he's like, you know, even now when, you know, Higashiguchi or Nakamura will put so much pressure on them, you know, and they're not used to it. So I would definitely go with this team. But I study football. You know, I'm lucky enough to have it as a job. So I do study football, and I've been, you know, of course, keeping up with all this, you know, tactical new ideas and formations. But, you know, in the last couple of years, the more I study that, the more I understand, you know, the more I get convinced that, you know, tactic is, you know, is becoming very fluid, and there are elements that influence the game much more. And, you know, I think that in the case of Japan, you know, confidence is really the key element. It's really, really important. I just, you know, that silly friendly game with Paraguay, I think it did a lot for Japan. You know, just the idea of like, oh, finally we won a game after five games where we couldn't win one. We scored four goals. I think, you know, like, it just, you know, these are the things that you know, that will, they can help Japan more than, you know, like tactical, you know, ideas. So I wouldn't change the team as this. I would hope that they have the same composure, same confidence. And, with Poland, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard because, in my opinion, they have, you know, Poland has the best center forward in the world. Lewandowski, for me, it's just an amazing player, and it'd be really, really hard to contain him. I mean, we just have to hope that not many balls come to him. But against Senegal, I think Japan have a chance, because African teams, you know, they're athletic and very skilled, but also they're, you know, like, they tend to, how do you say, to lose the compass throughout the game at times. So, I wouldn't change anything. I would just, like, you know, and hope that things keep going well. There's one thing, though, I would say it's very important. I think that Nishino needs to do. He needs to shield the players from the Japanese media, because, you know, like, everybody, you know, okay, this is like the 50th year of Japanese professional football, something like that. Wait, 92, 26th, okay? So, you know, there are journalists now and media now, the football media, who understand actually what's going on in a situation like this and will describe this game for what it is. A very good game where, you know, which started, you know, like with a very fortunate premise like that penalty and red card. But those media you see on TV every day, those, you know, talento, those guys who just singers and actors and people who improvise themselves as football experts are going to just like, you know, go all the way telling how Japan is going to win the World Cup and how just like, you know, Osaka is better than Neymar and so on. And these things, you know, some Japanese players tend to, you know, these things tend to get in their head, you know. So I hope that, you know, most of the guys who are now in Russia, they have enough experience to handle this. But I think that also it's very important that Nishino and the federation, you know, the group, you know, that's there, make sure that, you know, like the Japanese players stay focused on the game. To be honest, it was a great performance, a great result, but they haven't earned anything. I mean, they might very well, you know, lose the next two games and come back home, which will just mean that, you know, this was in vain. So I think that's, you know, the thing that concerns me is the mental aspects, you know, not much the tactical thing. Japan can play games like this. The players, they have it in their heads, in their legs, you know, like they can. It's just they need to stay focused. They need to stay focused. I understand they haven't achieved nothing yet, and they got two very important games, and they can, you know, bring out results games. They must at this point.
Yeah,
I think we just came full circle there.
Well, yeah, so we'll probably finish on Japan in a minute, Alan. But, yeah, let me get your thoughts briefly on what you think Nishino will do for Senegal. Just leave it as it is.
I think so. It's pretty obvious. Whether he had a certain particular formation in mind, or I don't think he's that stubborn that he realises, you know, he's experienced enough to realise that this team overperformed. They were wonderful. They were great all round, despite what we might have said about Kawashima or a little bit about Inouye from my side. The team beat Colombia, who were in the top 10 of the FIFA rankings, if you take that into account. The team that probably expected everyone to win the group. And as you say, they were confident. They looked good. They killed the game. You shouldn't change anything.
All right, so what do we know, before we go, what do we know about Senegal and where might Japan go about attacking them? Where might Japan go about actually winning that game and securing their place in the second round, or in the knockout stage, rather, of the World Cup? Alan, what do you know about them? I know about Sadio Mane and a few other players who play in the Premier League, but I'm not all that aware of, you know, any particular style, how they like to set up, whether they play on the counter or whether they're a more front-foot team. But where do you see Japan getting some joy against Senegal?
I think I'm with you. I know very little about them from what I think I saw one friendly, and I know some of the players who play in various teams, but when they're playing together like this, it's a bit of a cliche perhaps, but the African teams, they thrive on confidence, and also they get easily disrupted by certain things within the camp, whether it be money or some particular player getting more benefits than another. And if they lose, if they lose badly against Poland, I think they'll be finished already. So I think, despite what we've just said about not knowing what's going to happen, I think it will be the key for them. I think, well, you asked me about what Japan should do to them anyway, and I think nothing should change. They should be confident. They should attack as much as they can, but take the chances, and just basically don't worry about the opposition, I would say.
Cesare, is there a Senegal branch of a football tribe you can call on for hints and tips on how to attack Senegal?
No, actually, we are in touch with a local journalist, a very nice gentleman. He's, you know, I think this is just, he's been following the World Cup for the last 30 years. He's a 60-year-old man from Senegal. And, you know, like, he seems fairly confident. He said this is the best. It's a golden generation for them. It's one of the raising forces in Africa at the moment. Well, you know, we all know they have some, you know, excellent players such as, you know, Mane, of course, but Koulibaly, you know, like, I mean, it is overall a good team. One thing is just like they tend to, the defender to be very impulsive. And with the VAR now, I think that, you know, like there's way more chances of, you know, getting a penalty kick assigned. So I think that, you know, like in the situations of corner kicks or 1v1, a little bit of malice, you know, on the Japanese players could be something that help. I could really see a Senegal defender making a dump, you know, sliding tackle or something like that. And this could be like one thing to sort of try to capitalize on. It seems just one thing, by the way, I was saying, it's really interesting to see how just many players are reacting to VAR. And for example, today it's just like, okay, it was the goal line technology, but Kawashima seems like to try to just convince the referee that the ball didn't go in, as if, you know, like the referee wouldn't know from his watch. And also I've seen a couple of times Shoji just raising his hand, like calling an offside, but that's, you know, you don't need to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like because in Serie A I started already this year, I think that, you know, I watch about, you know, probably 200 games with VAR involved. You know, it's interesting how just like you watch it with different eyes and say, what are you complaining about? You know, like they're going to watch the replay now and find out if it was an offside or not. The VAR has been used in Germany as well, and we have quite a few players in the Japanese national team who played in Germany. That could be an advantage, I think, you know. Because, of course, the VAR is just like, you know, it's just an extra, you know, the eyes of God are checking on you. And so you know that there are things you cannot do. But also if you have opponents who are not used to it and they still think that they can get away with it, and you can make use of that. It would have been a great chance for Italy had they qualified it to the World Cup. But they, you know, like, okay, let's not go there because it's a very, very sad chapter. And this is, yeah. All right. I can't believe against Sweden. Okay,
yeah, no, we'll move on, yes, please. We're in a good mood here. We're in a good mood, Cesare. It's, yes, it's one of the greatest results in Japan's World Cup history, if not the best, a 2-1 victory over Colombia, and it sets them up nicely for the rest of the group. But as you have both said, yes, it doesn't qualify them for the knockout stage yet. They still have a lot of work to do in those two remaining games. We'll probably leave it there. As I said at the start, I couldn't have had the two better guests to have on after an occasion like this. You've both been there, done that, and started the company. So it's been fantastic to catch up with both of you after, yes, such a terrific performance by Japan. And, yeah, that's just about it, I think. So I'll bid you both farewell. It's 20 past midnight, and you probably, if you don't want to get to bed, you probably want to get to watching Senegal and Poland. So I'll let you do that now. Alan, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast at such a late hour. Great to have you on again, and yeah, great to revel in such a great result with you.
Thank you very much. The pleasure was all yours.
Indeed, as it always is. And Cesare, yeah, great to have you back on. Yeah, fantastic. Oh, some almost a goal in the Poland Senegal.
Almost a goal for Poland.
Great live reaction
that's still 0-0.
Live reaction from the football tribe office there. So fantastic, authentic. Yeah,
we got two more games to go. So you know, we just do another. We got two teams, like the night team and the day team. But today, basically, everybody's going to work. to both shifts because Japan's playing, and doesn't matter, the adrenaline get us going.
Absolutely. All right, well, yeah, great to have you back on, Cesare. Thank you so much for your time again at such a late hour, and yes, so we might catch up again during the World Cup if we can.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Indeed, thanks very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Cesare. Thanks, Ben.
Hey, thanks, Alan. It was nice speaking with you guys, really.
All right, that is it for the J-Talk podcast for another episode. We'll be back after Japan take on Senegal on the 24th of June. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.